You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Among the hardest things to do in business, figuring out the right price point. Can't be too high, can't be too low. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 14th of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with a value proposition, literally a proposed value. It comes in the form of an initial public offering. The semiconductor design company Arm went public today at a valuation of $55 billion. Investors lined up to get a piece of it at the offering price of $51 a share. $51 a share, which got set. How exactly? Marketplace's Bree Benishore is on IPO duty today.
To be born into the world as a public company, you need a midwife.
One of the first things you do is you go and you hire an investment bank, somebody like Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley.
Dakin Campbell is author of Going Public and chief finance correspondent at Insider. The investment bank midwife, two words you never thought you'd hear together, you're welcome, helps the company figure out how much it and its shares are worth.
What are the price earnings ratios, price to sales ratios of comparable companies?
Jay Ritter is a professor of finance at the University of Florida.
And then the company starts what's known as a roadshow.
Think Antiques Roadshow, but via Zoom these days. Again, Dakin Campbell.
The roadshow is really a chance for the company to tell its story to investors and to begin to pin down investors on how much stock they might want to buy and what price they might want to pay.
The price range starts to narrow, and the investment bank underwriting the IPO starts to go from midwife to middleman. The investors here are not just anybody.
Major IPOs are reserved for the best clients of the underwriter, so the largest institutional clients and very high net worth retail investors. So the public really doesn't have any access to it.
Scott Coyle is CEO of Click IPO, which works to get average investors access to IPOs. A final share price is decided as late as the night before the stock goes public. Then shares are handed out to investors, some of whom will sell some of those shares the next day to the public. The ideal price is one that, as they say, pops.
When the stock trades, they would like to see it trade up in value a little bit.
That looks good and rewards early and favorite investors. Restaurant chain Cava's stock popped 91%, considered too much. Facebook's IPO famously did not pop at all and then tanked. The average pop is 15 to 20%. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
If you happen to be among those who did get a piece of Arm at $51 a share, first of all, how? Second of all, very nice. Ticker symbol ARM, a little too on the nose if you ask me, closed at $63.59 today, up 25%. The rest of Wall Street, well, good, but not as good, let's just say. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Sometimes you just gotta play the tape.
The party will go on until the party stops.
That's Debbie Lucas. She's a professor of finance at the MIT Sloan School of Management, talking about the retail sales numbers that came out today. The party does go on, up 0.6% month on month, which is a lot given all the other challenges consumers are facing in this economy. Question is, how much longer can that go on?
I cannot forecast exactly how long it's going to last, but I will share with you that I am extremely surprised how long the U.S. consumer has kept this economy afloat. And all measures indicate that they still remain strong in propping up the economy.
Abdullah Al-Barani at Northern Kentucky University. Fingers crossed for the American consumer. You, me, the good professor, and Jay Powell, too. One cannot do macroeconomic news without doing microeconomic news. And that's where we take our coverage of this morning's retail sales numbers. Irene Kesselman runs Alicat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina. Here is her dispatch.
Our business right now is holding steady. We were flat for the month of August. However, we are up for the year and we are up for the month of September thus far. Our inventory right now is probably, I would say, higher than normal. We are already accepting goods for our holiday season, and I think that I probably took in a little bit more earlier than I anticipated, but that's okay. The store looks great. We are selling a lot of Halloween products right now and certainly will move into the Christmas season shortly thereafter. Our biggest challenge right now is always the prep season for holiday because it takes a lot of work and my staff has to unpack a lot of boxes and check in a lot of merchandise. There's a lot of checking to do. There are cases where manufacturers will ship the products earlier than what was specified on an order, and that always causes kind of a backlog for my staff. We are a small store. We have limited physical space. But no matter what, my staff manages to do what they need to do to get the merchandise checked in. We have events that occur from this point on. Believe it or not, we've started to wrap some Christmas presents. We've been having an incredible reaction to stuffies or I want to say stuffed animals, but they're not stuffed animals. They are stuffed vegetables and fruit and croissants and, you know, the slime and dough trend. It's alive and well. You know, I know that will continue into the holidays as well. One of the nicest moments that we've had actually was a couple weeks ago when a friend's friend came into the store with her daughter, and I was told that the little girl looked up and said, I just want to buy everything in this store. And it's always nice to feel appreciated and to hear that kind of reaction or response from a little child.
It'd be pretty nice to be a kid again, wouldn't it? Irene Kesselman, Alicat Toys, Carrboro, North Carolina. With the caveat that we don't know what we don't know, it sure looks like there's going to be some kind of work stoppage in Detroit. The United Auto Workers are said to be planning targeted strikes at just a couple of key plants. As Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports, really broad, indefinite work stoppages that go on for months, like the writers and actors strikes that are still going on, they are not all that common these days.
A major strike is the biggest lever workers have when negotiations deadlock, but there are a lot of reasons a union might not want to pull it all the way, says Todd Vachon, a professor of labor studies at Rutgers.
It kind of gives them the ability to further ramp up and escalate, right? Also, it helps them preserve their resources.
Cornell School of Industrial and Labor Relations has been tracking work stoppages of all sizes. PhD candidate Johnny Callis says almost half of strikes in 2022 lasted just a day.
Many of those are what I would term fixed duration strikes, where workers intended to walk out for just a short period of time and return to work unconditionally.
That may be because gains in the labor movement in recent years haven't been in big industrial unions that can afford to support members on picket lines, says Nelson Lichtenstein at UC Santa Barbara.
Those unions have shrunk, whereas the service sector, retail, hospitality, that's all boomed, gotten much bigger.
The unions that have spread store by store at companies like Starbucks, Trader Joe's, or REI often have just a couple dozen members.
So any strike can have any real economic impact on the company, but it can have a kind of demonstration effect.
Erica Smiley heads the nonprofit Jobs with Justice.
You at least want to show that your members are ready to strike, that there's a level of unity.
And particularly in customer-facing businesses, small strikes can bring a lot of public pressure on the employer. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Coming up, a word of advice.
Buy out your landowner.
Caveat emptor, y'all. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 331 today, about 1%, finished at 34,907. The NASDAQ rose 112 points, about 0.8%, 13,926. The S&P 500 lifted 37 points, also 0.8%. 4505. We heard from Sabri that pricing an IPO can be complicated, as can saying those words. So, looking at some relative newbies on the market today. Tech company Simple Limited down 0.2%. The forestry company Nature Wood Group Limited sprouted nearly 0.5%. U.S. retail spending, as I said, picked up in many categories in August, including at clothing stores. Gap sized up about 0.1%. Nordstrom rose 0.3%. The Children's Place grew 1.7% today. Bond prices fell. The yield thus rose on the 10-year T-note. It stands at 4.29%. You're listening to Marketplace. You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's going to be another couple of weeks, 3 weeks and a day, technically, until we get another update on the labor market. Last we heard, the unemployment rate in this economy, after being at or near record lows, was starting to scoot back up 3.8% in August. And as we told you at the time, that was mostly for good reason. More people getting back into the labor force looking for jobs. But here's the thing. Interest rates are high and are going to stay there for a bit. The economy is good, but consumers, spending though they are, as we saw with retail sales today, consumers still have a little bit of agita. And more to the point, the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan, should have been the modifier there. The CBO says the unemployment rate is going to keep going up nearly a full percentage point to 4.7% by the end of the year. The Fed says 4.5%, but you catch my drift. Even though those are still historically on the low side for unemployment, it is going to be a big deal for this economy and the workers in it if and when it happens, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
No one's talking about getting to double-digit Great Recession or early pandemic levels of unemployment this time around. But still, a rise of around 1% in unemployment would mean an additional 1.6 million Americans out of work, losing income, facing tough times. People like Bianca Bice. She's 33, an African-American union construction worker who was recently laid off from her $1,000-a-week job in Chicago. I reached her in her car making deliveries.
Right now I'm doing Instacart. It's about for unemployment.
The gig work is helping her make ends meet until her unemployment comes through.
I need money now. Not to say I can't be patient, but I need gas. I got to eat tonight. I got to eat tomorrow.
Now, a moderate rise in unemployment with more people looking for work isn't a big problem, as long as they eventually find it, says University of Michigan economist Betsy Stevenson. What would worry her?
Where a large share of the population is unable to find work, or they're losing work, finding themselves unemployed because they've been laid off.
Stevenson says that as headline unemployment rises, we'll need to keep an eye on how much more it rises for vulnerable groups, young workers, women in low-wage occupations, workers with less than a high school education, and Black workers.
An unemployment rate going up to 4.7%, you know, you could be talking about a 9% unemployment rate for African Americans, and it's hard to understand why that's ever necessary for any economy.
Tulane University economist Gary Hoover notes that even in the supposedly good labor market we've had recently, Black workers' unemployment rate has remained around double that of white workers.
Maybe the labor market never was as tight as we presumed when we still had this very high unemployment rate from a group of workers who were able and willing and looking to enter into the workforce.
Disproportionate jobless rates will ripple through the larger economy, says Michelle Evermore, an expert on unemployment insurance at the Century Foundation. And she says anyone who gets laid off now is likely to have a rougher time than they would have during the pandemic or in recessions before that.
We have many states with less than 12% of unemployed people able to access benefits. And the replacement rate, or the amount of income replaced, continues to trend down. So you have states like Arizona, where the maximum weekly benefit is $240.
Back in Chicago, Bianca Bice will be getting $400 a week in unemployment, a bit lower than the national average and less than half what she was earning before she got laid off. Bice is optimistic she'll return to construction work soon. She knows that with her training in a skilled trade and opportunities through her union, her prospects are better than in her previous job as an entry-level Amazon worker.
I'm not worried because I have been through a lot of my life worse than this before. At this point, I just keep it moving, keep my head up.
In addition to picking up delivery work, she's also doing some volunteer carpentry for a nonprofit these days to keep her skills fresh. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Inflation coming down, as it is, even though prices are still higher than they were a couple of years ago, is a good thing. It's especially good for people on fixed incomes, seniors in this economy mostly. There is a cloud wrapped around that silver lining for them, though. An estimate from the Senior Citizens League says the annual Social Security cost of living adjustment that takes effect next year will be around 3.2%, about $57 a month added to the average benefit check. In 2022, the increase was 5.9%. In 2023, 8.7%. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more on that smaller bump and seniors' budgets.
The annual cost of living adjustment, or COLA, is automatic based on how much prices rose from the third quarter of one year to the third quarter of the next. It's meant to stabilize the purchasing power of Social Security benefits.
Which is a nice feature of Social Security.
That's Charles Blahouse with the Mercatus Center.
It would be nice if it materialized instantly in seniors' pockets.
Instead, each year's January 1st adjustment makes up for last year's higher prices.
You get the compensation for the inflation that's already occurred.
Which works fine when inflation is low. But in 2021 and 2022, seniors and people with disabilities had to ride out months of rapid inflation before their benefits got a boost. Richard Johnson heads up the Urban Institute's retirement policy program.
When inflation was spiking and the COLA was slow to catch up, what we saw was pretty significant increases in poverty rates for people 65 and older.
The good news is this year's smaller COLA reflects a more manageable pace of inflation, for most Social Security recipients anyway.
The real divide is on how secure housing is among the elderly.
Teresa Ghilarducci, an economist at the New School, says a 3% bump might be plenty for recipients who own their homes. Not so much for those stuck in the red-hot rental market. And for beneficiaries who've come to rely on big annual adjustments.
I'm actually worried about the variability and not the level of these increases.
Ghilarducci says some folks will be feeling whiplash come January 1st. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
In this summer of what seem like extraordinary natural disasters, but which are probably just more like a hint of the future, the danger and damage are falling mostly on people with lower incomes. And oftentimes, those people live in mobile homes, and thus they are more vulnerable to natural disaster than traditional homes, and more of them nationwide are built in flood-prone areas. 10 years ago this week, devastating floods tore through Lyons, Colorado. And a decade later, many there are still struggling to recover. As Alex Hager reports now from KUNC.
When the rain started in Colorado 10 years ago, it was coming down hard. At first, Bonnie Newman, who lived there, wasn't worried. Then, in the middle of the night,
suddenly there was water. Lots of water.
Newman watched the river get higher and closer to her mobile home in Lyons, a town of a couple thousand people nestled in the foothills near Boulder.
It was a current of water. And it was right through my yard. He said, you know, get out, head for high grounds. And I didn't ask questions.
That was the last night Newman spent at home. Her double-wide trailer was flooded chest high, filled with mud and debris. It was totaled. She had to leave Lyons and still hasn't found a way back.
I don't think any of us planned to leave. We just didn't have a choice.
Two mobile home parks in Lyons were destroyed, and almost everyone who lived there left town. Many of them didn't have flood insurance. FEMA came through with some aid, but the agency points out that its payments are not designed to fund a total rebuild. Newman got $15,000. Her old next-door neighbor, Amanda Anderson, got the maximum payout from FEMA, $31,000. Anderson says that wasn't enough, and her neighbor got even less without any explanation.
She was right next to me. Like, none of it made sense.
What happened in Lyons sounds familiar to Kristen Smith, who researches flood recovery at the think tank Headwaters Economics.
Research shows that mobile home residents do have a harder time than most other residents in getting the recovery money.
After a disaster, mobile home residents often face expensive repairs on homes that typically aren't worth much to begin with. And when they get wiped out, Smith says, you're not just losing mobile homes, you're losing affordable homes.
Mobile homes are the most common affordable housing strategy in the United States, and I think a lot of people don't know that.
In Lyons, there's been an effort to add to the affordable housing stock, and still, 10 years later, they're trying to rehouse people who were displaced by the flooding. New affordable housing in Lyons gives priority to people who lost their homes in 2013, but few applicants are coming from mobile homes. Victoria Simonson, the town administrator, says that's in large part because they've already moved away.
You know, people stayed with family and friends for sometimes, you know, up to a year or two, but at some point you have to reestablish.
Before they were forced out, people living in these mobile home parks didn't own their property in the same way other homeowners might.
They fall somewhere halfway between ownership and rental.
Andrew Broombach is a senior fellow at the Urban Institute.
The people who live in these parks often own their home, but they don't own the land underneath it. And so our policies about disaster recovery actually struggle to acknowledge and capture that.
But in the decades since the floods, some things have changed for the better. Some places have made it easier for mobile home residents to access aid and housing after disasters. And across the country, some residents are forming co-ops or banding together to buy the parks they live in. Amanda Anderson, who lost her mobile home in Lyons, thinks that would have given her neighborhood a lot more options to rebuild or get paid after the floods.
That would be my biggest takeaway from going through a natural disaster is buy out your landowner before it's too late.
Anderson has gone back and says it's hard to see what the property owner did with the land where she used to live. Now it's a tiny house resort where visitors can rent a room for $200 or $300 a night. In Lyons, Colorado, I'm Alex Hager for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, ran out of room to put it up higher. Inflation at the producer level came out today, up 0.7% month on month. That is the headline number. You take out food and energy, up 0.2%, right where everybody had been guessing it would be. Here's Professor Alberoni at Northern Kentucky one more time.
So one thing about with PPI, and I was looking for this and I didn't see it because the core is still within expectations, but I was wondering if some of the stickiness of the prices that were embedded in large contracts or business contracts would start to adjust, and that would then turn into higher prices for the producers. But we're not seeing signs of that. So it looks like the producer is still facing healthy price levels. Nothing to worry about there.
All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context. One more from our economist that we called talking about retail sales and inflation. Debbie Lucas this time at MIT.
The thing I'm having the most problem with psychologically is going out to dinner. Because, you know, I used to be able to go out and maybe cost $20. These days it can cost twice as much and it isn't even the best wine on the menu.
Academics. They're just like us. Also just like us, the Marketplace editing staff, which is John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek. Amir Babawi is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.